Friends, the next subheading in this chapter, Greek Criticism of Aristotle, is Poetic Truth, Its Nature, Universality of Poetry, Poetry, Philosophy and History, Probability and Necessity, Defense of Poetry. Nature of Poetic Truth. Poetry imitates, like the other fine arts, but poetry is not a mere mimicry, a mere slavish representation of surface reality. It imitates imaginativity. It imitates imaginatively, and so gives us a higher truth, a higher reality than is the case with the other arts. It sifts and orders its material, disregards the non-essential, the purely accidental, and thus gives us the universal. In other words, the process of poetic imitation is a process of idealization, and in this way is achieved a higher truth, a higher reality than that of nature. Plato had accused poets of telling lies. He had called poetry the mother of lies, and so had banished poets from his ideal commonwealth. Poets have no idea of reality. They imitate merely shadow of shadows, and show poetry, he held, is thrice removed from reality. Aristotle, on the other hand, shows that poetic truth is much higher and universal than that of history, and that poetry is more conducive to understanding than philosophy itself. Other subheading is Idealization of Reality, Poetry and History. The poet gives us not reality, but reality idealized. It is not the function of the poet, he tells us, to relate what has happened, but what may happen, what is possible according to the law of probability or necessity. The poet and the historian differ not by writing in prose or in verse. The true difference is that one relates what has happened, the other what may happen. Therefore, the first distinguishing feature of poetry is that it deals with the universal, not the particular. It doesn't merely tell the story of a particular individual, but reveals the permanent possibilities of human nature. Its truth is a higher truth, and so it is a higher subject of study than history. History is based upon facts. Poetry transforms those particular facts into universal truths. This is done by eliminating the non-essential and thus exhibiting the logical link-up of events, the connection of cause and effect which links up one event with another. In a historical narrative, the various events and incidents are narrated in a chronological order, and in this way, the causal connection between them is obscured. Now, the poet eliminates the non-essential, the merely incidental, shifts and orders his material, and in this way reveals the strict logical order which characterizes actual experience, but which is obscured from view by the non-essential. Probability and necessity. The poet brings out the probable and necessary link up of various events, both in the development of plot and also in the internal working of character. The probability which the poet follows is not mere slavish adherence to reality. It is not mere verisimilitude, verisimilitude, but something much higher. Bucer rightly emphasizes that the rule of probability, as also that of necessity, refers rather to the internal structure of a poem. It is the inner law which secures the cohesion of the parts, the men and women whom we meet in poetry. The characters of drama are not average men and women, but much better and finer, and their thoughts and deeds are not those of meaner mortals. The probable laws of their conduct cannot be measured from the conduct of average humanity. The higher creations of poetry are not governed by the rules of ordinary experience. What they do and say cannot be judged with reference to their counterparts in actual life. Poetry imitates real men and women, but shows them much finer and better. It reveals the ideal possibilities embedded in human nature. Tragic heroes like Othello, Hamlet, Prometheus, and Achilles possess a grandeur, a magnificence of thought, will, and action, which at once raises them much above the level of average humanity and makes contact with them such an enlarging and exhilarating experience. In their actions, they are true to their natures. Their actions are the probable and necessary or logical outcome of their respective characters and of the environment in which they are placed. Besides, what they say and do is the necessary and probable outcome of what they have said and done earlier. The various events which the poet represents cohere not only with each other, but also with the character of the various dramatis personae. The other chapter in this other subheading in this chapter is the charge of falsehood. In chapter 25th, Aristotle examines in detail the charges of untruths and impossibilities brought against poetry. He sets aside the minor inconsistencies and technical inaccuracies, for they are not a serious flaw in themselves as far as poetic art is concerned. Then he boldly faces the fundamental objection against poetry that the world of poetry presents not facts but fiction. Such things never happened, such things never lived. Poetry is criticized as untrue and unreal. Aristotle replies that poetry is not reality, but a higher reality, what ought to be, not what is. Poetry transcends facts and reality. It represents things which are not and never can be in actual experience. It gives not the reality, but the idea of reality. In the poet's mind, it gives us ideal reality in the poet's mind. The characters say of Shakespeare or Sophocles, Sophocles, are unreal only in the sense that they surpass reality. They are not untrue to the principles of nature. Such characters are possible according to the laws of probability and necessity. They are expressive of the ideal tendencies of nature. Poetic imagination, its role. The poet may take his material from the rich storehouse of tradition, myth, and legend, because what has happened doesn't exclude what may happen. Moreover, stories from traditional sources have one great advantage: they are easily credible. What has actually happened is easily believed. However, when the poet borrows his material from reality, he must take care to universalize the particular. He must free it from much that is dross, the incidental and the non-essential. He must purify it and idealize it. The shaping power of his imagination must work upon gross reality and transmute it into imaginative truth. Aristotle's emphasis throughout is on imaginative treatment of the subject, whether taken from tradition or invented by the poet. It is the shaping power of the imagination which is important and which differentiates poetic truth from the truth of history. Poetic truth is different from the truth of fact. Things there are that have never happened and never will happen, but poetically speaking, they are more true than the occurrences of daily life. It is the business of the poet to deal with such possible occurrences, and they are ideally true, they are universals, and they never grow old. The other subheading is the illusion of reality. Probable impossibilities are, says Aristotle, to be preferred to improbable possibilities. The poet need not confine himself to actualities. He may tell lies, as Plato said, but he must do so skillfully. In the words of Coleridge, he must procure willing suspension of disbelief, for the lies he tells or the improbabilities he introduces in his poetry. The poet may feign, the poet may feign an imaginary world with imaginary persons, situations, and incredible adventures. But by the vividness of his narrative, by the minuteness of detail, and above all by the natural sequence of cause and effect, things are made to happen as they would have happened had they been real. By this artistic treatment, the effect is so lifelike, such an illusion of reality is created, that for the time being we forget that such things never were. In this way, the improbable seems probable and the incredible is made to look credible. The impossible not only becomes possible but natural and even inevitable. Homer, says Aristotle, is a master of this art of feigning. F-E-I-G-N-I-N-G. He quotes many instances from the Greek poet to show that he has the art to make the improbable look possible and convincing. The other subheading is the improbable, its kinds, its role. Now, the improbable may be of different kinds. First, there is the material improbability, the improbability regarding facts, for which willing suspension of disbelief can be procured easily. It can easily be made logical and inevitable. Secondly, there is the irrational. The irrational is a much greater stumbling block, and it requires the skill of a Homer to make it probable. The irrational contradicts the operation of logic and causality, which are the very basis of art. It should, therefore, be introduced only when absolutely necessary, and then only to arouse wonder and admiration. The use of irrational may be justified in epic, but in tragedy it should be used only rarely, as on the stage it is likely to seem highly ludicrous and improbable. For example, the pursuit of Hector by Achilles in Homer's Iliad is impressive and rouses our admiration, but on the stage the poetic illusion would be broken and the incident would appear ridiculous and improbable. The supernatural is a kind of irrational. Gods and other supernatural beings may be introduced only if they are popularly believed in. The marvelous may be untrue and impossible, but it would seem credible, for so men say. In tragedy, it should be used only with reference to what had happened in the distant past or to foretell the future. It should not be used for the incidents happening within the tragedy itself. The reason is that in tragedy, the events must be necessary an inevitable outcome of character, and they must be linked up with each other through the sequence of cause and effect. Hence, the marvelous can have no place within the dramatic action. Chance is another form of the marvelous, and chance events are to be avoided for the same reason. Chance is the negation of design and order, while the very essence of art is order and design. Chance is illogical, while dramatic action must obey the rules of probability and necessity. Aristotle allows it only in such rare cases where the skill of poet can make it look natural and convincing. Thirdly, the improbability may be of a moral nature, that is, it may be a violation of the laws which lie at the very root of human conduct. Moral improbabilities are improbabilities which do violence to the facts of human nature or to the feelings and motives proper to a particular situation. Such gross violation of moral laws doesn't admit of easy artistic treatment, and human nature can reconcile itself with difficulty to such improbabilities. Hence, their introduction is to be avoided. The necessity which Aristotle postulates for art is a logical and moral necessity, and any violation of it would come in the way of poetic and dramatic illusion. Then the other subheading is Poetry, its universality. To sum up, poetry is not a photographic representation of reality in all its trivialities and accidents. Poetic truth is of a much higher order. The poet deals with reality, but with a reality which is shorn of the particular and non-essential. In this way, poetic truth is permanent and universal. The poet deals with the permanent and universal facts of nature. He idealizes reality, but in so doing, he still remains true to the principles and laws of nature. By doing away with the accidental and non-essential, he reveals the laws of nature, laws which govern the course of events as well as human conduct. In this way, the poetic world, while basically still true to nature, is more intelligible and comprehensible. It is more philosophical than philosophy itself, for it is more conducive to understanding, as it presents permanent truths in a easy, pleasant, and concrete forms. While history deals with the particular and ephemeral, poetry deals with permanent and universal. It is not tied to particular facts as history is, but selects and orders its material, and thus, through its imaginative handling of reality, reveals the laws of nature and the laws of our being. Its truth is much higher than that of history, and it has greater organic unity as the non-essential is eliminated. History deals with what is, poetry with what ought to be. Poetry is higher than history because it deals with the universal and manifests the cause of this first principle of things. The poet seizes and reproduces a concrete fact, but he transfigures it so that the higher truth, the idea of universal, shines through it.